Welcome to this episode of NLN Podcast Nursing Edge Unscripted, the scholarship series. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Palazzo, a member of the editorial board for Nursing Education Perspectives. Nursing Edge Unscripted in our track entitled Scholarship celebrates the published work of select nurse educators from the NLN's official journal, Nursing Education Perspectives, and the NLN Nursing Edge blog. The conversations embrace the author's unique perspectives on teaching and learning innovations and the implications for nursing program development and enhancement. In this episode, we will discuss ChatGPT or chatbot's impact on the delivery and evaluation of student learning in nursing education. We will discuss the perspectives of our two guests today. Dr. Lim authored a guest editorial in the current issue of Nursing Education Perspectives titled Machine-Generated Writing and Chatbots, Nursing Education Fear of the Unknown, and Dr. Firth authored the article ChatGPT, Disruptive Educational Technology, which can be read in the May-June issue of Nursing Education Perspectives. Dr. Lim is a clinical associate professor at New York University, and Dr. Firth is a dean and professor at the University of Alabama, Huntsville, and I want to thank them for their time and welcome you to our podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Would each of you describe ChatGPT or chatbots to our listeners who may be unfamiliar with the term?
Well, I'll be glad to start. So I'm Karen Fripp and glad to be here with you. One of the things that has been developing over many, many years is the use of artificial intelligence. Its roots go back really to the 1940s. So this is an evolution of artificial intelligence. And many of our healthcare providers use a type of artificial intelligence in clinical decision support tools and everyday life. So this new iteration is the generative part of artificial intelligence. And generative means that it's creating new content. And so it takes many, for example, if we're talking specifically about ChatGPT, it has a mathematical equation and it looks at probabilities that something that it has scoured the internet for or is in its learning database is what's the probability that that particular piece of information would be relevant to the question that's been asked. And so it's generating information, whereas past artificial intelligence has used data to do predictions, but only to support decision-making, where this is generating new information.
Well, amazing how the technology's advanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you for that question. And building off it, what Dr. Fritz had mentioned, when we think of AI chatbot, I mean, we think that this was from last year. I give my example to my students that the electrocardiogram has been doing this for decades, right? It can read BQRST and gives you an automated interpretation of the cardiogram. What the new iteration of these generative pre-trained transformer, which is the GPT in the letters, is that it collected an enormous vast amount of information that is out there in the internet, and using artificial intelligence and natural language processing, it's able to respond to question much like a human being. And I say human being because this is sort of a touchy subject to say, mm-hmm. because it's not human, it's a robot that is talking with you. And so the information that is presented is based on the accumulated wisdom of the internet using predictive analytics. So for example, whenever we type nursing care, the chatbot would predict the next word, which is probably plan, nursing care plan. Mm-hmm. So using that vast information, they use mathematical equation tokens and make it into a some form of a automated response that can do it in very, very short amount of time. So it's very, very efficient. Because, for example, if I'm going to read a textbook about the nursing care plan of heart failure, that would take me maybe 45 minutes on a fast read if I really want to know a lot. But ChatGPT can do that in 2.5 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the main impetus and why it is so exciting, because it makes it so efficient. And with the whole idea that we are actually saving time of offloading some of our work. And my question to that, and I don't know if this would ever be answered, what are we going to do with the time we saved?
Be creative. Unless ChatGPT does that for us too. So Dr. Lim, please describe the pathologies of learning that you described in your article, the amnesia, phantasia, and inertia, and how these concepts relate to concerns about the use of ChatGPT and the potential consequences in clinical practice from learners relying on this type of assistance.
Great, thank you for that question. So I don't know if our listeners are familiar with Dr. Lee Shulman, and we probably have seen his name on this book, Educating Nurses. He wrote the foreword to Patricia Benner's Educating Nurses, A Call for Radical Transformation. So Dr. Shulman, who was a physician by training, was the president of the Carnegie Foundation for the Advancement of Teaching. So I discovered that article, which he wrote in 1999, completely before any of this AI ChatGPT came about. And he is a scholar in teaching and learning, and he explained that many of our learners, adult learners, students, college students, sort of suffers from the what he calls epidemiology of mislearning. He calls it pathologies of learning, but he also says it's epidemiology of mislearning or malfunction. So I kind of prefer the word malfunction instead of pathology. So amnesia, it is this nature of the learner that we forget. We are bound to forget. You have just presented something, you ask them the following week, they will not remember. So a lot of these requires experience and repetition. So my fear is that easy access to ChatGPT would sort of exacerbate the amnesia, because we are not engaging as much time. We're not investing as much time learning about, you know, the pathophysiology of ascites, for example, because now it's all been done for us by the chatbot. So when I wrote this article, I looked back to it later and said, ooh, some of my idea is probably already obsolete, and this is only 2 months ago. Because now, thinking about chatbot, this could also be a cure for the amnesia. Because the fact that we are exposed to certain new materials so little, and we have no context, by using chatbot, we might actually get the context, because I could tell the ChatGPT, explain to me a heart failure patient of somebody with diabetes who is living with mental health issues. That's the context that the ChatGPT might be able to do. Phantasia is the malfunction of understanding. So you have this notion that you learned something, but you actually did not, right? So the idea that you feel like you're doing research because you log onto the internet and you seem like you're doing work, which is gives you the illusion of research, but may not be with the depth and breadth of the knowledge you would like to achieve. And one of the disadvantages of these ChatGPT is it hallucinates. It gives you sometimes information that may be totally unrelated to the context. And that's a challenge. So how do you deal with the phantasia? We provide them context, you know, we make sure they got the patient experience to deal with the knowledge, so it becomes more contextualized. So inertia is, you know, how when we went to nursing school, you learn vast amount of information, and so much of this is sitting at the back of our brains doing absolutely nothing. I learned maternal nursing, but I never use that information, but I'm sure if I'll be put on hypnosis, I'd be able to come up with those
extract
information
it.
in the back of my head. But we are not using the information. So ChatGPT AI is producing a lot of maybe information that we will not be using, and it's a sort of a disadvantage to a profession like ours, because we rely a lot on movement, activity, things that we do with our hands, because we're prompted with our brains to do that. So that's an issue with ChatGPT. And because nursing is such contextualized to empathy building, the tool is not yet well-formed to develop empathy, because mm-hmm. empathy requires proximity, presence, intuition, those types of things. The other pathology, or the other epidemiology that I did not write in my article, but Shulman mentions, is nostalgia.
Wow.
This is the one that is afflicting the faculty.
Yes. So
I've been a teacher for 28 years. So nostalgia is the feeling that, well, it was better in 1990. Mm-hmm. Well, I've learned it this way in 1985. Why can't you learn it the same way I did? So the valuation of the technology is very different based on the nostalgic impression. So, and that is something as a faculty, I have to guard myself of saying that, yeah, I did grow up, you know, with the mimeograph machine. That's how I learned my nursing care plans, you know, but we stopped doing that. So we have this idea that the past was better. So, yeah, sorry, a long answer to your...
No, that was a great answer. I appreciate it. And it segues really nice into my question for Dr. Frith is, you know, your perspective is that ChatGPT, we can use this for good in nursing education. So I'd like you to elaborate a little bit on that position.
Yeah, so one of the things that we need to prepare our students is how to use technology correctly. And so I've been teaching a long time as well. And I remember when we first had the internet available for students to look up information. And at that time, we began teaching students about how to evaluate the quality of information that they found online, which we still do provide some of that information. And so I think it's a responsibility of faculty to help students critically think about the use of technology and how it can help or hinder them in their learning or in the care of patients, which they ultimately will do. And so I just have the position that every faculty member should really think about generative AI. It will not go away. I mean, it's taking over so many things. And there are going to be advancements, particularly in medicine and drug therapies, that will revolutionize, just like antibiotics did, the care of patients in the 1920s to 40s, where people don't die from common infections anymore. And so I think to have a black or white opinion about generative AI is nostalgic. I'll take Dr. Lim's word. I think it really is that regardless of what we valued as in our experiences, for example, for me, early teaching experience, it doesn't, you know, technology moves on whether we want it to or not. And so for me, I think the most important thing for faculty to do is to really have conversations about the use of ChatGPT with themselves and with their students, and to come up with some strategies that can help students learn how to use it ethically. Because I do agree with Dr. Lim's article about the losses in learning that really will happen if we don't help our students to learn how to use this tool and any other tool that comes along in the future in a way that supports learning and doesn't detract from it. And I think there are ways to do that. So, for example, if you are working with a group and you want them to investigate What are the evidence-based strategies for the care of a person who has diabetes and hypertension, and they're living alone, and they're 70 years old, and they're working on a project together? Certainly, they could use ChatGPT to get a gestalt learning about it. But then, and I think that's okay. And it gives them a place to start, but that's not the finish line. And so where they should be educated is how to effectively look at what ChatGPT puts together. If you ask for references from ChatGPT, it may or may not be a true reference, and students need to know that.
Right.
And so it may just be a made-up reference. So there's a real need to educate students on the use of it, the parts that are good and the parts that they need to be careful about, because these are going to be lifelong learners. And so we need to help them understand what's good practice for learning and applying to their education. There are many different ways it could be done. You know, a teacher could ask it to create, you know, questions on tests and have students correct those questions. Just different kinds of ways that a faculty member could get them to understand the difference in real valid information and vague sort of okay information, but not precise and not in depth, is what you get from ChatGPT.
Right. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Both of you have concerns about the use of ChatGPT to undermine scholarly writing. Is it time for us to re-examine what is considered scholarly writing? And for example, as Dr. Firth mentioned, using ChatGPT to write a draft.
Yeah. You know, Steve, there was I don't know if you read that article recently in the New York Times. There is a chat bot in development that will write the news. So in other words, the news writer, one day, the fear is they will become obsolete. So you could give them the why, where, when, how, and who, and it'll give you essentially the full news report. So the New York Times published an article, but they didn't participate in the experiment. So in scholarly writing, which is sort of the highest cognitive use of our cognitive faculties, is writing, right? So we take pride on our own scholarly work that you do based on years of study. And now we have this technology that can shorten that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And there is reason for concern for that, because the idea that you cannot really fully know if the work is plagiarized or not. It's so difficult to do that, although there are products also, AI products, who detect, there's an AI solution to an AI problem.
Right.
So it's sort of cascade technology. And the fear is that there could be a certain disuse of our brains, the atrophy of our human intelligence. There scholars out there who think that there is a beginning sign that chatbots might eclipse human intelligence, because the machine will not get tired, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever you write a piece or your dissertation, an article or something, you tire out. Your brain is not as good. And the machine brain will not get tired. So for me, one of my concerns with the chatbot generated writing is the lack of adequate and reliable and good references that Dr. Fritz has mentioned. I read somewhere that references are like thank you notes. This is one way of the writer to acknowledge that you did not come up with that yourself. Mm-hmm. One of my faculty here at NYU, and I was in the master's program. This is, by the way, BC, before the internet, before computer stuff. He said that nothing is really truly original these days. So even if you think you've come up with something original, someone might have already thought about it before you. So to me, a well-written reference list is our way of you know, bowing to the people who did scholarly work before me, before us. So we want to give them due credit. We want to thank them. If we generate this information through chatbot without proper attribution, there is ethical concerns with that. In fact, people are worried that any paper that you and I, all of us in this gathering, have published is now somewhere that being used to generate responses to some some chatbot. So I don't get acknowledged for that, right? So you could ask the chatbot to provide references, but you know they don't provide primary references. It's always secondary references, and sometimes it's just wrong reference that they put in there. So those are the concerns. So in 50 years from now, when there's a technology there that, you know, put the hammer down and says, yeah, AI will surpass human intelligence. There's no question about it. Then we will have to recalibrate the way we see writing or the way we see academic work.
And I'll just add to that. I think some of the solution to this concern is working in teams. So it's difficult now to do very thorough research as a single.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And so when you work with groups and you bring the intelligence and the motivation and the drive of a research team together, that you can't reproduce that in artificial intelligence. You just can't. Not at this point. Now, there's AI that you can get a little close to, but not really. And so I think, as long as teams understand their end goals. And, you know, for me, when research is being developed, it's always a negotiation between the ideal and the feasible and the goals of the team and where they want to go. And even when you get results back, there's a negotiation about what are the next steps. Okay, we found this. What does it mean? Where do we go in the future? Even if you have that mapped out as a team generally. I think that will stay. And I think as long as researchers or scientists really hang on to their ethical values and the belief that science is based in our human understanding of phenomena, that there's hope that it doesn't take over everything. I think it does require people to think deeply about this. And I love Dr. Lim's article because he brought it back to, what learning is about and the problems with learning and how this exacerbates it. And I think good thinking, such as what he has written, helps ourselves and faculty across the country to really think about this in a way that is beyond the knee-jerk reaction and just kind of hash out what are our concerns, what kind of solutions could we take, what are some alternatives, and what do we believe as faculty is important for our students across anything from, you know, undergraduate all the way through doctoral work, because all of them will be affected by generative AI.
Well, it's like any technology, right? We're going to have to learn to adapt, and there'll be good things from the technology and things that aren't so good. Mm-hmm. And, I have a feeling this is going to move at a very fast pace over the next several years. And it's going to be, we're going to have to respond nimbly and quickly to some of this. It's one thing to be fearful, another to accept reality and that these things are here and are going to continue. And how do we best put them to use? And we might not even know yet how we're going to use this technology and what it's going to bring for us in the next 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so being open-minded to it and starting to explore it and investigate it now and using it in some way in your classroom to teach students how to best interact with this type of information and technology. So I want to thank you both so much for joining the conversation. I appreciate the time out of your busy days to come here and share your thoughts with us. To our listeners, if you have not had the opportunity, please be sure to look for their work, Machine-Generated Writing and Chatbots, Nursing Education's Fear of the Unknown, in the current issue of Nursing Education Perspectives, and Disruptive Educational Technology, which can be found in the May and June issue of Nursing Education Perspectives. So again, thank you both for joining us. It was a pleasure, and it gives us a lot to think about and probably more questions than answers.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.